Hello, everybody. Welcome to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers, the show in which we try and answer some of life's meaningful and meaningless questions. Blooming good to have you here, everybody. And it's lovely to have you here, Sarah.
It's great to be here.
And it's great to have you here, Chris.
So good.
Yes, they're all bursting at the seams. Now, what have we got this week? Well, throughout our working lives, nearly every single one of us will have a boss or manager for a good portion or even all of that time. Many of us will work under a number of different bosses, of course, and will no doubt have opinions about every single one of them. One day we might even become a boss or manager ourselves. So then, what makes a good leader? And we'll say leader, it's a little bit more open than say boss. We don't always have to be in the workplace, but that's where we're primarily looking. So straight off the bat, Sarah, when you think of a good boss or leader, what do you think?
So I think something that I kind of I really prize in a leader is someone who is prepared to say when they've messed up.
Oh,
and humility. So I would say that can apply to, you know, a work boss, a political leader.
Very rare in this political sphere. Very.
But refreshing. When people sometimes do it, yeah, I really respect that. You know, if someone just says, oh yeah, sorry, that was me. Yeah, my bad. Sorry about that. Won't happen again. Doesn't have to be a big deal. Doesn't have to be a big groveling apology. Mm-hmm. Just when I've seen people do that, I always just think, that's good leadership.
Yeah.
And that's showing that you don't have to be
I touched
terrified.
Her.
Oh, I mean...
good leadership, is that, Sarah? Is that what you're saying?
I would slightly question that one.
Yeah, I took all the pension pot.
What I look for in a leader
isn't
a groper, isn't an embezzler, isn't a murderer.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm happy, to be honest.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
So I don't ask for much.
Your bar's very low, is essentially...
I reckon you probably assumed you wouldn't have to put those things out there, didn't you? You're like,
I don't
Marcus will know that that's a given.
I hope I've never worked with any of those people. I hope not.
I think you're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely right. Do you know, the British Heart Foundation said, there was a study into this, and it said that a study suggested, because you can't say this, you know.
You can't say definitively.
Yeah, exactly. So they suggested that a competent manager may help lower stress and protect against disease.
Wow. Absolutely, you can believe
that. A study among 2,000 employees, which was reported in a national newspaper here, found that 62% of people have left a role, or more than half have considered looking for a new job just to get away from their manager.
That's a bit sad, isn't it?
It's very sad numbers.
For your whole job, your whole work experience, you know, we spend however many hours every week in work, and for it all to boil down to just, I can't hack this one person.
Yeah. So we're not going to talk about anybody's current boss, of course.
No.
Because that would be suicidal. But in the past, we've had many jobs and a number of different bosses. So when you walk into a job then, Sarah, and you sit there and you meet the boss, or even if they interview you, what is the vibe? So obviously you want them to be able to say when they've made an error, but that might be quite difficult to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
First impressions.
I would also, I'd really want to know that they back their team.
Mm. Right.
I'd say it probably kind of falls under the same thing of like, if something goes wrong, that they're going to be like, yeah, well, you know, they're not going to drop
the
people they manage.
You under the bus.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because, you know,
sort of a bit of loyalty there.
Loyalty and
not
also
a
just
slivering
like,
snake.
Certainly not. Mm. And it's kind of just the thing that, like, the buck stops with the manager. Because at the end of the day, you're being paid to be a manager. You're paid more than a non-manager. And so, like, yeah, I just really respect that when you know someone backs you to the hilt and that, like, if something does go wrong, they'll say, all right, well, yeah, okay, they may have screwed up, but I'll make sure it doesn't happen again. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want that fickle. You don't want a boss to
be
fickle.
Exactly. Yeah. Just, I think it was like you said, Chris, that idea that you might get chucked under the bus.
Yeah.
That must just be horrendous.
Yeah, because if you feel safe, then you're going to do your job better.
Exactly.
Essentially.
Well, in theory, you'd think. Yeah. But what about you, Chris, when you...
I've had many bosses over the years. And so the one that immediately comes to mind is the one that I had prior to the job I've got now. And she was incredible. And what was brilliant about her is she's incredibly driven and ridiculously intelligent. I remember once being in one of these meetings. It was the head of each department, so there's probably like 10 people in this room, and she wasn't present, so she phoned into the meeting, and each person would present 5 things that they were working on, so 50 odd things being spoken about. Each item being spoken about, she would know about
that's good.
Intimately. Jeez. And be like, oh, don't forget to speak to this person, or read that report, or do this or do that. And I was like, that's insane. But she married being driven and intelligent with an amazing level of compassion. Yes, and I've never seen the two done well.
You can really have, you can have a few of those, but not all of them in many people, can't you? You
know? I've seen people be driven, but so driven they forget about their team, I guess, or the people you were saying. Yeah. And then I've seen people who are really compassionate, and you all are a bit like directionless at work, and you're not really sure what to do.
A bit too nicey-nicey.
But to combine the two, I just found incredibly rare, and I grew probably more in about 18 months under her leadership than I would say I'd done in 10 years previously.
So she's the one to thank for turning you around.
Yes, she was incredible. absolutely brilliant.
I think it's interesting you say about that, you know, the compassion as well as the kind of drivenness, because I think some bosses maybe have a tendency to be really harsh, and they sort of say, like, well, they've got to learn, they've got to, especially like when you're young in your career, you know, oh, well, like, you know, I had to learn the hard way, they've got to as well. Yeah. But I actually think having that compassion and like we were kind of saying, feeling secure in your job can help you develop far more than fear does.
And I am like incredibly high standards. And I remember once working for a long time on a big project. I'd been doing it joint with the Football Association. So it was quite a big one with the UN and the Football Association we were working on. And there was a team of us working on it. We were really proud, took it into our office. And she's just like, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense. This needs to get sorted out. Like, it was really, and she's like, come back to me tomorrow with a better plan. Come back tomorrow with a better plan. So like, this is, but actually afterwards she would say, look, I know you can do it. Like, I believe in you. I know you can do this. Like, no one ever gets it first time, but you will get there. And it was just the encouragement bit. And then the next, I remember waking up really early, this epiphany, this is what we need to change. One thing, go in there the next day. And she's just like, you've nailed it. Well done. So do you know what? It wasn't this, well, you should do, this is your job. It was very much in good interpersonal skills.
Carrot and stick.
Incredible.
Well, she's been honest there, because if you've not done the right thing, you've not done the right thing.
But made me better at my job. Yeah, and
but the encouragement
that.
Thing there. Yeah. Encouragement's very important.
It's the two things together. If she just had a go, you'd have been broken.
Yeah.
And if she'd just sort of been nice, you'd have ended up with not the right thing.
Exactly. Mm. So for me, there was those, that they were the most important things in that context.
Yeah. For me, if you are a manager or a boss or a leader, whatever word you want to use, don't be a flipping micromanager.
Oh, I hate micromanagement.
It is the devil. it is awful.
It's not good for anyone.
It's not. No, it isn't. That's
no one
the thing.
Benefits from it.
No, and this is not a kind of, oh, I prefer to be a more hands-on manager, or I prefer to be hands-off, attention to detail, maybe not so much, or interpret it as you will. I'd like you to... No, micromanagement is bad. It's awful. Years ago, I had a boss who micromanaged, and it just felt so claustrophobic. You have to give... Obviously, depends what job it is. I appreciate that. Clearly, if you're doing a job where if you make a mistake, someone's life can be at, you know, you can't interpret certain...
traffic control.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Yeah. You've got to be on the money there,
I would
right?
say that is literally micromanagement.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you've got to be on the mark. But I think we're talking sort of more generally, of course, here. And but even at air traffic control, though, if your boss was like constantly on your shoulder going, right, make
you're
sure
gonna, you're going to screw up.
Well, exactly. And you don't actually learn. Yeah. You have to be given room to fail. Again, not with air traffic control. that's not a job that you've got to get that right. No room for failure there. But again, generally speaking, of course, you have to be given room to fail, I suppose, because otherwise you don't learn.
Yeah.
And when you remove that avenue, I understand, again, if someone is constantly failing, then you have to sort of step in. But I think it's a ghastly thing.
Can micromanaging be done well? As in, you know, when you start a job, actually, you need some prescription, you need some guidance. Like,
no, because I think again, you will have to be more attentive as a manager in certain situations with certain people.
Yeah.
But I think micromanaging in its sort of to its nth degree is crowding that person out and not really...
You should just be managed.
Yes.
That's it.
Normal, exactly.
Healthy management is teaching people how to do the job and helping them develop. Like,
so
that
you can
is management.
Go into the detail, but you're talking almost the persona of micromanager is what
it's
we're talking about.
And it's quite being petty. Shoulder all the time. Don't do it like that. Don't do it like that. Yes. Do it like this. You're not... Oh, no. I do it like that.
Yeah.
Just,
use leading questions. Do you think this would be a better way of doing it, or that? Like, you're actually encouraging people to actually think for themselves, but you're leading them into the right direction.
There was a horrible... I was looking into stories of bad bosses and bad work situations.
Oh, gosh. And there was that's limitless.
Yeah, well, of course it is. Yeah, and there was one where they were in a call center, and this particular employee had submitted this story to a newspaper, And she said that the amount of calls they would get, were it was very high volume of calls, to the point of that if you wanted to go to the toilet, you had a toilet request button on the keyboard.
I've heard of places. I'd
never heard that. And of course, she said 9 times out of 10, they would deny you going to the loo. Place smelt of crap by the end of the day. No, but do you know what I mean? I was a bit like, I just couldn't work in those.
No, that's insane.
We're not designed to live like that.
No. I mean, like, clearly if you're going to the toilet 5 times every half an hour. Yeah, it is. It's like yeah, that's exactly what it is. Incredible stuff, yeah. So, I think don't lead by force as well.
Yeah.
Is another one.
And by fear.
Yes.
Because I've certainly in the past witnessed... I don't think I've really had a boss like that myself, but I've definitely witnessed from afar bosses who rule by fear.
Mm.
And a lot of the time people say, oh, but, you know, they do really know their stuff. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, I'm sorry, I don't think that's an excuse.
Yeah. No.
Like, we are all human beings. We're all people with feelings. And, you know, I just don't think it's ever appropriate to be a dick.
No, I completely agree. And I think that you can be a firm leader and there can be an element of fear. So I'm now thinking of, say... like football managers.
Go on.
There can be an element of fear. No, but you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to get on the wrong side of the boss. But if you can inspire people to I mean, Brian Clough, for anyone who might
even
remember.
I've heard of Brian Clough.
Okay, right.
There we go.
So former,
I can be the barometer.
Yeah, right, there you go. Well, former Nottingham Forest manager, blah, blah, blah. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of Brian Clough, but if not, legendary English manager, should I say. And, you know, the players would say that, oh, I wouldn't want to go for a drink with him. You know, on a personal level, I didn't particularly like him. I never wouldn't want to go for a drink with him, but I'd walk across a desert for him.
Yeah.
And that's the difference, isn't it? He led by, you know, he was firm and all the rest of it, but by force. I mean, people don't want to act like that for a boss who leads by force. Because there's a respect there. You don't necessarily have to like that boss, but he's inspired. There's the person management aspect of it.
Yeah.
You know, or in football, you would tend to say man management. Of course, that's a probably outdated term. Player management it would be a better one.
It's a weird concept, though, isn't it? That you don't like someone
to
go for a drink with, but that you do something drastic for them.
I know.
I can't compute that.
Yeah, ultimate example would be military. Literally be it.
Yeah,
but military. So it's a high pressured situation. So if you're in the military, I mean, the British military is a fascinating beast in that it brings together two of the complete opposites of the social classes. Mm. Yeah. Your troops on the ground tend to be from very, very working class backgrounds, and then your officers and your heads and your leaders essentially are from proper posh. Like proper, you know, we're not talking about they prefer crumpets to toast in the morning. We're talking about you're tapping into a different culture, you know, links to royalty, own land, all the rest of it, proper upper classes. And so when they come together, and it's an interesting dynamic because I know a guy who was, what would he have been, a captain. He'd done tours in Iraq. So he would have been in charge of about 50 men, roughly, that kind of thing. And he said that, because I said, do you not find that these guys who are from proper working class backgrounds, who would normally, if they heard a voice like yours in a pub, would just laugh at best, you'd get away with being sneered and laughed at. Yeah. He said it's odd because of the dynamic of the British military. And again, I'm not saying this is right or wrong. It's just the dynamic. They hear my voice and they'll know that I'm one of the leaders and I'll kind of have almost like their respect, but they won't like it. They might not like me sort of as in where I'm from and all the rest of it, but we will have a good working relationship.
And I wonder if that's seeing each other in extreme situations.
Well, I think
you
so,
band
yeah.
together, because obviously, you know, you're broken at the start of training, aren't you? Mm. That's what they do. But if you're all in that together, if you're doing the running together, if you're doing all those things, then you grow in respect. A friend of mine does this thing called XCC, which is Extreme Character Challenge, where
that
they go
like the literal worst thing in the entire world.
That is not Sarah's idea of a good weekend.
No,
Every week he's like, "Oh mate, you should do it with me," and I'm like, "That no, I don't want to do
not
it."
Insane.
And then when he's, "Oh, it's brilliant," you know, the whistle goes off at 2 a.m. You're already camping in the Breckens or up in the mountains of Scotland.
Oh god!
But he would be like, he genuinely thought he was going to die. Mm. You know, it's carrying rucksacks, you know, 1 a.m. up the top of mountains to see the sunrise, but, you know, walking through rivers, like real extreme character challenges, it says. Basis, by the end of it, the bond between everyone is just absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I wonder with the military, if actually, because you've been through so much.
Oh, yeah.
all that stuff, as you said, to do with class, to do with accent, all those things are completely broken off because you've got down to the real self within that person.
Well, another trait of a leader is they like leaders to lead by example sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And he did that, this guy I know, when they were in Iraq somewhere and they're going along in the sort of convoy or whatever, and there was a suspect thing at the side of the road with a little wire sticking out of it, and they thought it might have been some sort of bomb or whatever. And they'd been working, you know, they were on their uppers, they'd been touring, they'd been on action and all the rest of it, and they just needed to get back to base sort of thing. And he said, oh, well, when you see something like that, you then have to kind of phone in and get it all checked, and it holds the whole thing up. And he took a closer look and he thought, I'm not sure that is actually an LED device, or whatever they call it, you know.
ID.
ID. All the lingua.
I don't think an LED is very dangerous.
And LEDs are absolutely fine. just LED street lamps or somewhere in Iraq. Yeah. And he actually, he put his hand in and pulled it out, and it was just like a tin can. It was nothing.
Golly.
But he got massive respect for that because he was basically trying to get his troops back, and he was fairly confident when he did it. There was always an element of danger, of course, but that gained him even more respect from his men, because they were like, wow, that guy's putting himself out there for us, and he was concerned about us getting back, getting rest, getting food and all the rest of it into us, you know.
It's also kind of it's one rule for everyone.
Yes.
It's not like, I can't bear hypocrisy. But when, you know, if you're saying I expect X and Y and Z from you, then you want to get it back. And then, you know, like in that situation, like he's expecting them to, you know, risk their lives in certain situations, and he's doing it back for them.
I mean, that is probably as extreme an example as you can get.
You've gone for the nuclear option straight away.
There. Well, back to the study, the worst characteristic of a boss. So there was 50 worst characteristics of a boss. As many as 50. Gosh. And the worst one that was highlighted by 1/5 of employees is a failure to communicate clearly what they want.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, how are you ever supposed to get anything right?
Well, and the second one, which I suppose is linked to this, is an inconsistent boss.
Oh.
You've got personal experience, Sarah. Or perhaps you've seen it. Let's say a friend
again,
of yours.
I can think of one from afar, of just one day they're matey and, you know, you can have a laugh and a joke and you can be a bit, and then, you know, the next day or next hour even, you're getting the whole like,
Well, it's a bit sort of bipolar, isn't it? You don't want that in a boss.
You want to know what to expect.
Yeah.
And if I know that we're not mates, that's fine. I know what our relationship is. We can crack on.
It was confusing, isn't it? A mutual friend of ours, Chris, you know, has a boss, and he said that you do something right, full of praise.
Yeah.
Like you're the flipping flavor of the month. Do something wrong, comes down on you like a ton of bricks. And it messes with your head.
Yeah.
Like, genuinely messes with your emotions.
Well, you end up not wanting to do anything. So it completely paralyzes you because you're like, I know that the rewards could be great here, but actually...
And you don't trust that boss.
No.
It comes back to that feeling secure.
Yeah.
And knowing that this is a state, like, you know, I don't want to make mistakes, and making big mistakes, obviously, you know, we can't be doing that. But I know this is a space in which I can do my best, and I know you know I'm doing my best.
Yeah.
Go on, Chris.
I was going to say, on the bit with the chappy from the military, there's an element in there as well. I've been able to, knowing the boss also wants to serve the team in a way, like to use that term, like actually he sees that the team want to get home. He doesn't want to delay them. But the fact that they'll do that is service to the team.
Yeah.
And I'm reading quite a lot of books on leadership at the moment for the course that I'm doing. And a lot of the ones would come back to actually service leadership. Actually, maybe it's serving the bigger vision of the company or whatever. But actually, and you're saying it, Sarah, quite a few times, like this, if you feel like your boss has got your back, your boss is there for you to do well. For me, an intelligent boss knows that if the team succeeds, it makes the boss look good.
Exactly.
So do everything you possibly can to make your team succeed. I remember once managing for quite a big charity, and we had government contracts in Scotland, Northern Ireland, one in England. So I had three different sites, quite a lot of staff. And I was a bit younger as well. And I thought, I just learned about love languages, which I've talked about on other shows. And I thought,
you love a love language.
How can I love my boss?
Yeah. Oh, no. I thought, if my staff feel valued, they'll do well.
Yep.
That was quite a simple one. So I started to watch the team, and I was just like, I wonder what their love languages are. So I found out with one person, this girl was absolutely
sweet nothings, whispering in her ear.
Hers was quality
never
time.
Never ever touch.
Yeah, no, no, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
That is one of the love languages.
It is. I'll come on to that.
Okay, okay.
In a very okay way. So, but I realised with one girl, like, she was quality time. She'd need. She was the only one who'd get half an hour at the end of every week to talk to me about the what the week would do.
Right. Yeah.
And I realised very quickly she would then. She basically, we promoted her really quickly because mm-hmm. she felt better at work. She felt heard and valued, and she had some good ideas. She then led the team almost in my place. Oh. So I could then focus on other things. There was another lady, and she was incredible. She was from Armenia. She'd been doing the job 20 years. She could strip an AK-47 in under 2 minutes. But this is in a charity. And I realized we looked after survivors of trafficking, and she was like a mum to them. She was incredibly loving, but I know it. She was always kind of patting them on the back and things like that. So I thought, your love language is touch. So I just put my hand on her shoulder and say, you are doing an incredible job. I'm really proud of you. And she would basically, like, all the problems would go away and she'd get on with it. And my whole thinking was like,
really interesting.
If people feel loved and valued, then
you
they
can
will
manipulate
do
them.
Oh, sorry. But yes,
that's
no inappropriate
isn't
touching.
Ever manage
you know,
anyone.
No inappropriate touching. I just have to say that clearly. That's wrong. Yeah. It's illegal.
But no, but you're absolutely right. There's a quote from I forget who it was, but I think it's on like the government website, you know, .gov.uk we have in the UK. And it says this: in leadership, people and relationships are more important than tasks. Tasks do matter, but the main role of a good leader is to motivate and inspire other people to do the tasks well. Mm. You need to know how to delegate and be the leader of others. The leader is the conductor of the orchestra, not the first violin. Mm. But you also need to know when to step in and take responsibility.
Yeah.
And going back to football, if I may, Sir Alex Ferguson, Manchester United manager.
He'd sub himself on. And
But he was a great delegator. Yeah. That was his genius. You know, he for years, you think how football, like anything, whether it be the film industry, the music industry, in sport, it changes as you go. And people who were flavor of the month or year in a particular era, then their methods look outdated and time has passed them. But, you know, they're a bit of a belong in a bygone era.
Yeah.
Whereas with Ferguson, his genius was he was manager from what, the late 80s until well into the 21st century. And but he managed to keep himself going because man management was his focus, and he would delegate to people who were a bit more fresh.
So he wasn't rigid to a model of how teams should perform, but actually, if it was all about the person, he could evolve and actually always knew what to do in the
absolutely,
right situation.
Yeah. And also, if from a leader's point of view, if you delegate, but you delegate well, if you over delegate, then you're shirking responsibility. Yeah. But if you get it right, it'll also save a leader from burning out.
Mm. Yeah,
because you know, a leader can certainly go under all that. I was thinking about this, the best teachers you had at school.
I was literally just, as we were having that conversation, weirdly about the military.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, I know this is the opposite end of the spectrum. There's my history teacher at school, Mrs. W.D., Mrs. Williams Davis, she was an absolute legend.
Right.
And that thing we were talking about, fear.
WMD would have been very appropriate. Well,
she knew every now and then, she would go nuclear.
Like, again, another military reference.
Yeah.
We're not talking screaming and shouting, but every now and then she would get really angry, and it was the quiet anger. You know, the worst. She was just really disappointed.
Because you don't want to disappoint her.
But this was the thing.
Yeah.
We absolutely loved her because you knew that she really, really cared.
Mm.
And she only busted out that fear maybe once a term, and it was to motivate. So I remember one time none of us knew the sort of the dates of the Tudor kings and queens, and she was furious, and we all went away. And the next week
where her boundary lines were then, isn't like
you
so you feel
knew.
Safe
got another Tudor.
Yeah, we felt safe, we felt supported, and you know what, like even the really naughty kids listened to her because she just knew how to speak to them in a way that wasn't patronizing but also wasn't just like screaming at them like other teachers did. So when I actually, like, when I think about a good model of leadership, I think of Mrs. WD.
There you go.
That's really interesting. That is, I think about the best teachers that I had. It was the ones who people either liked or were inspired by to do well. Now, there was one or two where people thought, when Mr. Such and Such comes down on you, it's a bit like a ton of bricks. But he does motivate you.
Yeah.
Motivation is so crucial.
Yeah.
And it's so difficult for a leader to motivate people who are just not interested in the slightest. And I think in the classroom, that is quite an obvious one.
And again, it's using that combination of carrot and stick, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I had a drama teacher who was incredible. She was Y-Bird actually on Playdays for a while.
What?
So she came.
She was what, sorry?
Y-Bird on Playdays.
I'll tell you what.
Playbus.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So she, but she, I remember I picked GCSE drama because I heard you had no homework. And so.
Classic teenage Chris.
Yeah, this is very much me. And so very first drama lesson, and it goes around the room and you're sat on the floor. And why did you choose drama? And people would be like, because I want to be an actor or an actress, or I want to improve my confidence or whatever. And I just was like, I heard you had no homework, so that's why I'm here. Mm. So I basically didn't take drama seriously from day one.
Yep.
It comes to parents' evening. And with your schools, did you have to sign up your parents to see your teachers?
Mm. Yeah, that's
obviously you select the teachers you don't want your parents to see.
Yes.
And then you tell your parents they were busy and too booked and at the time you wanted.
Okay, I was never that devious.
So that's what
rings a bell.
So I'm giving you teenagers all the sort of all these hints. Anyway, so I thought, there's no way I can have my mum see my drama teacher. Mrs. Roderick, that was her name. And so she saw my mum queuing up for another. Oh, that was it. Because my mum made me go with her to parents' evening because I'd always say,
she could identify.
They couldn't have meant me. They must have meant James because I'm a really good student and they've always get us confused. My mum would drag me to parents' evening. And anyway, so Mrs. Roderick sees me with my mum and goes up to my mum in the queue and is like, oh, it's such a shame that I couldn't get an appointment with you. And she just says, I absolutely love having Chris in my class. Like, he is such a joy. Whoa. I reckon he could do really, really well. He just if he could put in a bit more effort next year. And I thought at that moment, you covered me there. And I tried really hard. I almost managed that class afterwards. I wasn't like, I wouldn't let people disrespect Mrs. Roderick.
She's
good. A good egg. Yep. Like, she's got our backs. And it's really interesting. Like,
she's not a snitch.
No, she wasn't. But she, and I really, that GCSE year, I really tried hard. And I really, really appreciate that. And I thought, you're very clever. Mm. Do you know what I mean? You could have done many different things there.
And it helped you win that BAFTA,
she
of course.
She obviously is clever enough to look at individual students and go, what do they need to inspire them?
Exactly.
She obviously saw something within me tonight. Maybe if Chris feels I've got his back, then he'll step up.
Yeah.
So she was brilliant. She was excellent.
That is excellent. Well, just maybe to finish, that as I said, there was that top 50 traits of a bad boss. I'd just like to... So the first one, as I said, doesn't communicate well. Second, I think they're inconsistent. Third, set their own rules. Four, doesn't understand my work. And it goes on and on, of course. And we get down to sort of the ones that are in the 40s. Number 46, passing wind. That in the top 50, apparently bosses, farting is a problem.
I can't say I've ever come across that problem.
49.
I'd love it if these were broken down into industries.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah, the insurance industry, particularly flatulent.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. This is in the restaurant trade or, you know.
Number 47, I think they're very scruffy. Again, no one is. Sneaking in at number 49, I think they're sexist. So sexism's only at number 49. So
that would be like my number 3.
Yeah, well, it depends if that's your experience. I suppose it's traits of a bad
boss.
Also,
you're probably more likely to experience that if you're a woman, aren't you?
So. And just sneaking in at number 50 behind the sexism one, bores everyone with their holiday photos and anecdotes.
Does that still happen? That's crazy.
Clearly somewhere it does.
No, that's what social media's helped out, because it's just like, I know. The Seychelles was great. Yeah. You put it all over Facebook. Put an album of 500 photos on there.
Yeah, exactly.
So no one cares.
So yeah, but if you are a boss, you're a leader, take a leaf out of the good stuff. We just
of Miss Chris WD and Alex Ferguson.
And
no one wants to see your holiday.
Mrs. Roderick.
Roderick, because she was Welsh.
There you are. Good Welsh. You know any more?
That was terrible.
Nope.
I like you thought about giving it a go.
Oh, lovely.
Burda. Oh,
please.
Peldroid. I'm speaking Welsh to you.
Oh, Peldroid. Yeah. That's not bad.
Burda is Welsh.
Yeah, Burda, she might. I mean, you did say good morning, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, well, some people,
allow it. It's dark outside, but
Hoffi dwi, you know.
Whose coat is that jacket?
Araf means stop, which is probably what you're thinking now.
I'm just screaming it in my brain.
Whose shoes are those boots?
He's just speaking English. I'm genuinely speaking.
To be fair, a lot of Welsh does involve that.
Yeah, but I'm speaking the oldest language in Britain to you, and you're not appreciating it.
I appreciate you in all that you do.
I like to be appreciated by my bosses, you see. Yeah, there you go. And Sarah is very much the boss of this podcast. Well, thank you very much for listening to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers. Subscribe to the podcast so you never, ever, ever miss an episode.
That'd be a shame.
Find us on Twitter and Insta @AQQAPod. There we are. Thanks very much, Chris.
Brilliant.
Thanks very much, Sarah.
Tidy.
Thank you very much, everybody. We'll see you next week.
That was lush.